Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello, a very warm welcome to this edition of DW's Africa Link program. I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
And I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet. Do remember that we are also live on Facebook and you can join the conversation there. There is more there than what we are covering on radio.
In today's edition, as voting draws to an end in Sierra Leone, we find out how voters felt.
I've been here since last night. I slept in that boat. The queue is not moving at all.
I'm voting because of changes and development.
And we shall follow that up by looking at some of the issues that dominated the campaign period.
I'm looking for peace. I'm looking for soft president to make us proud.
Education for our children, good facility of rules, employment for youth, all these things is what we are expecting from the next president.
These are some of the stories we've lined up for you. But first, here's what's been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Millions of Sierra Leoneans have been voting in reportedly peaceful presidential and parliamentary elections in the capital Freetown and elsewhere on Wednesday. Voters have been casting their ballots to choose between 16 candidates standing to replace President Ernest Bai Koroma, who has served a maximum of 2 terms in office. Corruption and a stagnant economy have dominated the West African country's election. Results are expected within 2 weeks. Here in Germany, 8 suspected far-right extremists of the so-called Fritzl group have been found guilty on terrorism charges and attempted murder after a trial in the eastern German city of Dresden. Members of the far-right group were sentenced between 4 and 10 years for a series of explosive attacks targeting refugee homes and political opponents. Also in Germany, prosecutors have charged a Vietnamese citizen with helping to kidnap high-profile oil executive Trinh Xuan Thanh in Berlin last July. German officials accused the suspect, known as Long In H, and other Vietnamese spies of abducting the executive, who has since been sentenced in Vietnam on charges of embezzlement. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. UN Human Rights Chief Zayed Al-Hussein delivered his annual report on global rights violations on Wednesday, warning of ethnic cleansing in Myanmar, the rise of right-wing populism, and an increase of anti-migrant policies in the United States and the EU. Speaking from Geneva, Switzerland, Zayed also described the situation in Syria's Ghouta region near capital Damascus as apocalyptic.
Claims by the government of Syria that it is taking every measure to protect its civilian population are frankly ridiculous. This month, it is Eastern Ghouta, which is, in the words of the Secretary General, hell on earth. Next month, it will be somewhere else where people face an apocalypse.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has arrived in Ethiopia for his week-long tour of 5 African nations. Speaking ahead of its departure, Tillerson announced the U.S. would pledge more than $500 million to help Africa fight famine and food insecurity.
The United States sees a bright future in Africa. We have an opportunity to be part of Africa's journey to a stable, prosperous future for its people, to help African countries build the capacity to take care of their own people.
Meanwhile, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has arrived in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare. It is the first time Lavrov has visited the country since Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa took power following Robert Mugabe's resignation in November. And now in sports, North Korean athletes have arrived in Pyeongchang, South Korea for the Winter Paralympic Games. The athletes will compete in over 70 events for a total of 200 medals starting on Friday. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
This is DW's Africa Link, a program that brings you up to date with the latest from the continent and beyond. I am Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr. Don't forget to share your comments with us on our DW Africa Facebook page. Now, let's start with our first story. Sierra Leoneans have been voting to elect the next president in a national election pitting 16 candidates. Polling stations opened at 7 a.m. while others opened an hour later. 3 million voters breathed the hot sun, many of them craving economic change and a boost to living standards. Our own Abubakar Jallo is on the ground and now reports from the diamond-rich district of Kano.
In the sweltering heat of nearly 40 degrees, tempers flare at this polling station in Gbense, Koidu town in Kono district. Some voters complain of long waiting hours.
From 5 o'clock today, I don't come on.
I left my home at 5 a.m. and I've been here since then. I have children and I have to find food for them. I can't stand here till 3 p.m. When will my children eat? I want to vote right now.
Right now, I'll vote.
I came all the way from Kokima to vote here. I left when people were praying at 6 a.m. I have been standing here all day and have not been able to vote. I left my two small children at home.
From 12 o'clock.
I've been here since last night. I slept in that boat. The queue is not moving at all. Things are really slow here.
The officer in charge here, Kai Konde, agrees that there was confusion with the voter register, which caused the delays. But voting is now going on without any hitch, he told me.
The delay is the shortening of names, because the names are organized at alphabetical order. But when you look at it now, there are names that are supposed to be there, and they are finding difficult to identify them there.
Nearly 300,000 people are casting their ballots in Sierra Leone's diamond-rich district of Kono. About 400 kilometers away from the capital, Freetown, Kono is one of the least developed places in Sierra Leone. Many of the voters here are asking for change.
I vote for my president because my inner will lead and I am going to come police country for sufferness. I want to see a change and a good thing in this country.
I'm voting because of changes and development. No, I can't explain much about the thing I saw and the thing I see with my eyes is very, very pathetic, so that I want to change this. I want changes. I want somebody who can take this country to the higher level. That's why I need changes in this our country, Sierra Leone.
These voters speak of underdevelopment in their region as the reason why they want change. But when it comes to stamping their ballots, many vote on party lines. Former Vice President Samuel Samsumana is from this district and enjoys a comfortable majority here. The ruling All People's Congress APC party swept the district in the 2012 general elections when Samsumana was in the ticket of APC with President Ernest Bai Koroma. This voter, Eunice Asise, says Samuel Samsumana is the right man for Kono.
He's just the son of the soil, and he know the concern of the people, and he know every little things in Kono district as well as Sierra Leone.
The ruling APC party lost their support in Kono when President Koroma removed Samsumana as his deputy. The people of Kono are throwing their weight behind their candidate, Samuel Samsumana, but his chances of winning are not so great due to his lack of popularity in other parts of the country.
That was DW's Abubakar Jallo with that report.
Yes, as we just heard from Abubakar Jallo, who witnessed the voting process in the Diamond Rich district of Kono. Now, the poll is about to come to a close in a few hours from now, but whoever takes the mantle will be charged with living up to people's expectations raised in that report by Abu. But let's now revisit some of the issues that dominated the campaign process. There was talk of Chinese involvement in the process. Well, China is often seen as not interfering in African politics, but rather interested in business. Let's hear from Claudia Anthony on what happened on the ground.
From Gagridge in the far west of the capital Freetown to the far east in Calabar Town, I came across thousands of voters, men, women, nursing mothers, and pregnant women on foot or scrambling for tricycles to reach polling stations in order to cast their votes. This initial enthusiasm and turnout defies what was evident in the national polls of 2012 when voter excitement was lukewarm. This time round, they have a purpose. Not even the scorching sun could stop them.
I'm looking for peace. I'm looking for soft president to make us proud.
Education for our children, good facility of rules, employment for youth, all these things is what we are expecting from the next president.
Yes, the expectations are huge, and the voting pattern is beginning to shift. Formerly, people voted along ethnic and regional lines, but people are now starting to talk about issues, bread and butter issues that border on national welfare. However, the political campaign that led to today's national elections is slightly tainted with the emergence of the physical presence and participation in Sierra Leone politics by non-Sierra Leoneans. The Chinese involvement has been making rounds in social media. On the final day of the incumbent party's political rally, I saw the party's supporters waving the flag of the Republic of China. This is something voters have been discussing.
Seeing the All People's Congress, which is the current government in power, and using Chinese flags and during their rallies, you know, it did not go down well to a good number of Sierra Leoneans.
The APC government, they are using the Chinese to publicize their votes.
Voters access polling stations on foot or using tricycles due to vehicle restriction on voting day. Some civil society groups and human rights activists, including the Sierra Leone Bar Association, opposed the restriction. But the High Court yesterday ruled and upheld the restriction.
Claudia Anthony from that town near the capital, Freetown, in Sierra Leone. Very interesting what's happening down there. We can only say we're keeping our fingers crossed for the Sierra Leoneans that the best comes out and their wishes are met.
Exactly. And, you know, as always, we post a comment on our Facebook page and all of you get on board and comment on the question basically that we're asking. So regarding the Sierra Leone election going on, we're basically asking, isn't appointing or anointing a successor, I should say, better than changing a constitution to run for more terms? And, well, Stephen Indula says, by electing a new president, he has the opportunity to examine the whole system, if possible, start from the beginning.
Interesting. Mm. And Bazira Dean from Kampala here says, each country has its own need and challenges. And as a leader, you're expected to choose the most appropriate means to take your people through the prevailing situation, even if it means being persecuted by outsiders. Very interesting comment here. But it was also interesting to hear the two reports from our people down there on the ground. Mm-hmm. If you remember, Claudia said, not even the sun could stop these people. And this is also something that Abu also highlighted in his report. So it really gives you the impression that people are so dedicated. They want to change. They want to see a change. And like the two reports highlighted, there are people, I mean, the politicians have really been talking real issues that concern the people.
Rightfully so. I mean, people are understanding. And I can sense this general wave blowing on the continent that you have the right to exercise your franchise. You know, so if you want change, then you know you have to go out there in your numbers and effect that change that you need. Because otherwise, there's going to be a political party, a government in place that majority did not vote for. Happens all around the world. So I am very excited to hear that people know their rights and they go about it right.
So do join the conversation on our DW Facebook page.
Definitely. Your comment will be read live on air. Moving on to other stories. Well, the chaos in the White House doesn't seem to ever end, does it? On Tuesday, another high-profile advisor to U.S. President Donald Trump resigned from his post. Economic advisor Gary Cohn quit in protest against the president's decision to levy global steel tariffs. DW's Patrick Gross reports.
And again, Donald Trump has to find a new staff member. After his top economic advisor Gary Cohn became the latest senior member of his administration to resign. Cohn is reported to have fallen out with Trump in the ongoing dispute over steel and aluminum tariffs. The former head of the investment bank Goldman Sachs strongly opposed President Trump's plans, arguing that protectionism will harm especially the American economy. However, in his usual competitive style, Trump hit back at his critics over the departure of his most trusted lieutenants.
So many people want to come in. I have a choice of anybody. I could take any position in the White House. And I'll have a choice of the 10 top people having to do with that position.
With one opponent less, the U.S. president is expected to implement tariffs on steel and aluminum in the next few days. It should be recalled that only last week Trump's communication director Hope Hicks announced that she would step down. Her move followed the departure of Trump's chief of staff, his national security advisor, and a string of others, giving the impression of chaos and dispute in the White House.
Patrick Grosse reporting. So don't forget to keep sending us your comments. When we have time, we'll be reading some of them out loud on the show.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko Kimet.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr. We're also live on Facebook, DW Africa.
Still to come, another looming drought in the Kenyan town of Garissa forces children to abandon school.
This is a boarding school and we are unable to keep the learners because of lack of water.
But before that, we head to Zimbabwe, where Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is visiting Harare to strengthen relations between the two countries. This will be the first visit since Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa took power after Robert Mugabe's resignation in November. Mr. Lavrov earlier visited the country in 2014. Now, I caught up with DW's correspondent Privilege Zvani in Zimbabwe concerning the visit and first asked him the essence of the visit in relation to the current state of relationship between the two countries.
The relationship has been there since 2014 when the Russians came to open a platinum mine project in Zimbabwe worth about $3 billion. But then the project stalled along the way because of issues of corruption. But then now they are coming back to renegotiate that deal and also to bring another business delegation. We also understand that already there is a coal mining company that has been issued with mining concessions in Zimbabwe, a Russian mining company that will be mining coal. The project is about worth about $400 million.
Is there a sense that this time around, Russia and Zimbabwe's dealings can actually be fruitful?
Hopes are high, looking at the new administration of President Emmerson Mnangagwa. I think the mantra that he has been saying to the international community is that Zimbabwe is open for business. Apart from the Russians, a lot of delegations, including the Germans, we've been coming, business delegations that have been coming to Zimbabwe to prospect for investment opportunities.
What does Zimbabwe really get from this?
What Zimbabwe needs at the moment is capital injection. You may understand that in the past 15 years, there's been a lot of capital flight from Zimbabwe because a lot of international firms are closed down and left Zimbabwe. So Zimbabwe, for the economy to kick in again, it is in dire need of international capital. The government has said that if any investor is coming into the country at the moment, if they are mining any mineral, they have to institute what they are calling beneficiation of that mineral. That mineral is not supposed to be exported in its raw format. It is supposed to be processed in the country and also create jobs for the locals so that the country benefits from the investment.
What is the general sense of what the public think about this?
What the public is yearning for is to see these deals and the talks that are happening coming to being implemented. A lot of people are unemployed, so they are hoping that with the coming of these international investors, employment opportunities may be created for different people because you have a lot of people who are skilled, but they are sitting at home.
That was Privilege Mushfanwi with that report.
And certainly our social media editor has been engaging with you on this topic as well. And he posed the question to you, which goes, could Russia be another potential player in the African politics? And certainly some of you have been commenting. Those of you who haven't yet joined the conversation, please do join. Fatou Hussani says, Africa can do better without Europe. Rwanda is an example. They fought corruption, ethnicity, and rallied behind their leader, Paul Kagame, a very effective leader indeed.
Well, Rod Tideman says Africa doesn't need Russian political interference. Putin's overriding agenda is Putin, certainly not the African people.
And Ozulumba here says, well, we say no to US and we say no to Russia. They can do better by taking their rivalry elsewhere. They should remain in Syria.
Very interesting comment there. But to wrap it up, Indeso says Russia has always played a major role in African politics, mostly under the radar. The African independence movement started after Africans witnessed the Bolsheviks uprising in Russia in 1917.
Africa Link program is live on DW Facebook, so do join the conversation there too.
On the spot.
from politics to something else. Now, in Kenya, there is drought that has again ravaged some areas, leading to acute water shortages and hunger. According to the government and the Kenya Red Cross, some 3.4 million people are facing starvation, with the most affected being children and women. As Andrew Wasike reports, in the affected regions, children have been forced to drop out of school.
In Garissa County, Jaya sublocation, children have stopped going to school, while new enrollments have plummeted to alarming rates. Some families have been forced to migrate in search of rain and pasture. Children from those families that choose to stay help their parents to search for water and pasture for their livestock. Ahmed Ali, the head teacher of Garissa Primary School in Garissa, shared his experience with me.
The school has an enrollment of over 350 pupils, but it has now drastically reduced due to now the drought. This is a boarding school, and we are unable to keep the learners because of lack of water.
In neighboring Emwanata Primary School, the situation is the same, as the head teacher Ibrahim Adan explained.
Currently, we have 202 students compared to 285 students who we had enrolled last year.
Kenya's Devolution Cabinet Secretary Eugene Wamalwa said that the Kenyan government has set aside over 3.8 billion Kenya shillings to be directed to hard-hit areas, giving an assurance that no Kenyan has died of drought so far.
The 3.8, we will be using 2.5 billion for food and cash transfers. We will also be applying 306 million for water tracking. There are areas where the situation is worsening. Through the Ministry of Agriculture, we will be also utilizing 85 million shillings towards planting materials. And we would want to supply inputs to ensure that even where we get rains, the farmers can be able to plant and be able to ensure that we get some food coming in.
Lactating mothers like Rukia Mohammed can no longer breastfeed her child.
Educating our children is a challenge for us. We normally go to bed hungry for days. This forces our children not to go to school because of food scarcity. As you see, I have a 2.5-month-old baby. I am forced to spare the little food I have for him because I have no milk to breastfeed because of the hunger.
The drought is severe in areas mostly affected by large-scale deforestation. Climate expert James Muhindi from the Kenya Meteorological Department says that the current rains experienced in some areas is not sufficient, and as the drought persists, more Kenyans will be in need of humanitarian assistance.
Well, one thing is true that we have destroyed our environment. Human being is ensuring that wherever there are trees, they are being cut down. It's as if they are not careful to see that what has been giving us rainfall, they are destroying the environment. This is a very, very serious issue, and it's high time the public knows that what they are doing is not right, because it appears in some years to come, we may not come up with any rainfall at all.
Andrew Wasike filed that report.
And you know, Jane, unfortunately, as the drought is going on, there's other matters to be sorted out in Kenya. Now, Uhuru Kenyatta's government cannot account for $400 million in public funds, according to a damning report from the Auditor General, highlighting the country's failure to crack down on graft and misuse of state resources. And of course, we posted this on Facebook and some comments came through.
The word corruption seems to get people talking so much. I think this is one word that doesn't, that no day passes by without people complaining and talking about it. Momoni Raska from Ghana says $400 million has not gone anywhere. It can be found in the pockets of the greedy politicians.
Those must
Kenya.
Be very huge pockets then, if we can find that in there. But also Charles Ongol John says, I was recently in Western Kenya and could witness near Ugandan conditions of poverty in the villages.
And he goes on to say, and this actually, I'm told, which means he wasn't in this capital city, cannot be compared to the affluence wealth that you can find in the highlands of Kampala, I mean, of Kenya's capital, Nairobi. Interesting comment there from Charles Ongole. Yeah. Martin from Kenya says, corruption is the order of the day in my country. So sad that Uhuru and his government keep entertaining it.
Well, Brett Blake says it happens all the time. The Canadian government lost $1 billion and never accounted for it, but they were pretty sure it was spent on government business, as I'm sure the Kenyan government is also. Interesting one. They're trying to say that it's not just an African thing, but it happens all around the world. But that is no excuse to entertain it. Corruption
certainly
is wrong.
There is no justification for it anyway. Okoye Poaching says, America is forcing us on this corrupt man. Raila is my president. Well, he is going back to the Kenyan politics now. We leave it at that.
Definitely.
Living Planet Africa.
In Living Planet Africa, we talk about homemade solutions for homemade problems, or rather for problems that affect us back home. That seems to have inspired some farmers in Zambia and Malawi, as the two countries are struggling to contain an armyworm infestation devastating crops. Two farmers could not wait any longer. They developed a smart remedy to repel the pests and shield their plants from attack. So what is the smart remedy like? Here is Wolf Gephardt with the details.
Malawian farmer Jesse Kanjala checks her maize. Yet another plant has become infected by the feared larva known as the fall armyworm.
Much of the maize crop has been destroyed. We realized very late that the armyworms had become resistant to commercial pesticides. But those farmers who applied this locally made concoction have managed to save their crop. Maybe if we'd had this method earlier, much more could have been saved.
The method invented by Jessie and her husband, James Kanjala, uses ingredients that are cheap and readily available. Salt and pounded chili, all in a solution of water. Their chili and salt cocktail hits the worms unprepared. It's hot, spicy, and quite deadly, as explained by James.
With this local concoction, the fall armyworms die instantly. If all the farming families were to adopt this local pesticide, we could rescue the remaining crop in the field, so the farmers would have something to harvest.
Governments in southern African countries have promoted the use of pesticides. However, the crop-munching pests burrow into the plants, which protects them from contact with the chemicals, and the worms build up resistance as well. That leaves farmers with few options but to come up with their own ways of protecting their crops. Unlike Jesse and James Kanjala, who use chili and salt, for Samson Muhoye, he uses a detergent and salt solution to repel the armyworms. It is also proving quite effective.
When this pest affected my crop last year, I had no idea which pesticide would be effective. I lost almost all my crop. This year I've saved a lot of it, and I think if Malawians adopt this method, they will be able to harvest something.
Experts say losses in Africa could range from 8 to 20 million tons in just 12 maize-producing countries alone if the pest is not controlled. And according to Malawi's Minister of Agriculture, the pest has spread in most parts of the country, infesting over 200,000 hectares of maize. Homemade worm killers are not officially acknowledged, as explained by Godfrey Kaira, the crops officer at the Malawi Ministry of Agriculture.
But if they are working, farmers can still use them because they're able to control the pest. But as for government, there is no any way it was written that these technologies can be used to control for armyworm.
Farmers Jesse and James Kanjala don't wait for government solutions anymore. Their chili and salt cocktail has successfully kept the fall armyworm at bay for over a year now.
Isaac Mugabe presenting that report by Wolf Gimhart. Now, this is a very, very interesting and inspiring initiative, isn't it?
Definitely it is. And I'm actually looking forward to be talking about more initiatives like this, Jane.
Yeah, I think that the farmers are rather very encouraging. And I like the fact that the government is not stopping them, but telling them, well, it's not yet proven and tested, but if it works for you, you're free to use it.
Definitely. We may not have enough time to read some of the other comments, but we appreciate all the comments that have been coming through. And, well, James, Lavrov is in Zimbabwe, but Tillerson is in Ethiopia. But we'll have more on that next edition of the show.
Keep it to Africa Link. I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr.